Act. It lets you and me vote for the Butterball industrial model or choose to go back to the future of agriculture, which is the art and science of cooperating with rather than trying to overwhelm nature. That cooperative ethic is the choice of the remarkable Good Food Uprising that has spread across the country in the past 30 years. Now, the fastest growing segment of the food economy, it is creating the alternative model of a local, sustainable, small-scale, community-based, organic, humane, healthy, democratic, and tasty food system for all. This is Jim Hightower saying, to take part in the good food movement and find small-scale farmers, artisans, farmers markets, and other resources in your area, visit www.localharvest.org.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's take on what Wall Street and Washington are up to. For information, visit HightowerLowdown.org.
What has agri-industry done to your Thanksgiving turkey? I'll tell you today on Hightower's Radio.
This is Ed Asner, and you're listening to 90.1 FM KKFI, Kansas City Community Radio.
This is Radioactive Magazine, a KKFI public affairs program of progressive activism, opinion, and commentary. Opinions expressed on this program are those of the speakers alone and are not necessarily the views of KKFI, its staff, volunteers, board of directors, show hosts, or other guests on the program.
Welcome to Radioactive Magazine. Sheila Styron is here to tell us about the International Day of Persons with Disabilities, which will be this coming Friday, December 3rd. Sheila is blind from birth, and she is a blindness, low vision specialist with the whole person in Kansas City. She is also a co-chair of the Transportation Committee of the American Council for the Blind. In addition, she recruits advocates for the blind and discusses the use of guide dogs. I'm Spencer Graves. Sheila, what is the International Day of Persons with Disabilities?
Well, hi, Spencer. I'm really glad to have an opportunity to talk about all things disabilities here today on Radioactive Magazine. And this day was it's sponsored by the United Nations, and Ito Utini was going to be here tonight to talk about it and was unable to. So although I don't represent the United Nations, which she does, and this day was started by them back in 1992, it is celebrated every year in various ways. Some of the big advocacy organizations will be having fundraisers, their big, you know, gala events on December 3rd. And it is a time to both celebrate people with disabilities and the accomplishments we've made, particularly in the United States. And it's also a time to reflect on all of the work that we have yet to do. And so tonight I will talk about, some of those various laws, legislations, you know, where people are around the world and, you know, people with different disabilities and who live in different places face a lot of different issues. So I, of course, am blind. And so it's really easy for me to pull up a lot of interesting things that we still have yet to accomplish. And feel free to interrupt me at any time. Otherwise, I'm going to take you on a journey of my life and my work, and I'll just go until you say it's time for a station break or you interrupt me.
I'm especially interested in hearing you tell our audience about events that might be come up this Friday or so regarding the International Day of Persons with Disabilities here in the Greater Kansas City metro area.
I don't actually know of any celebrations that are taking place, but you can look online and see. Yeah, I don't know of anything locally that is taking place. I know that that the International Center for Disabilities, the International United States Center for, it's called NICL nationally, but the international version, the United States branch, is having their gala on Friday evening. And I know that people will be doing a lot online just in terms of raising their profile for their own causes. And I am aware that a lot of people are raising money this week under the guise of, you know, this is the time, just like today is Giving Tuesday, this Friday will be the day for persons with disabilities. And again, it's not just so much a celebration, but it's to remind everyone of everything out there that still needs to happen. For instance, I work at the Whole Person, and the Whole Person is the Center for Independent Living here in Kansas City. And we serve, my specific job is really mostly helping people who are blind and low vision, providing activities, and also getting them connected with the resources that they need to get the services that they need. You probably would be surprised to know how often maybe I get a call and somebody went into the hospital for hip surgery and woke up blind. You know, a disability is something that can happen to anybody, you know, the next day at the drop of a hat, at a moment's notice. Things can be fine 1 minute, and then when it happens, you know, what do you do? Where are the tools to learn to get the accommodations in your life you need to live a full and fulfilling life? Yes. And we can, and we do as people with disabilities, but it takes a little figuring out, especially
You mentioned Ito Otini. She's one of the most, she's blind and one of the most positive and energetic and really successful people that I've met. You're volunteering at the Whole Person, and that's THEWHOLEPERSON, all one word, yeah. .org, right?
Yeah, I work there actually.
But
we do need volunteers. We use volunteers.
So,
continue. Okay, so for instance, part of my job is talking to people and referring them to, you know, to what might be helpful to them beyond the Whole Person. But there aren't a lot of blindness specific, blind friendly activities in Kansas City for people who are blind and low vision. So I have formed a partnership with BikeWalk KC, and we have about a dozen tandem bikes. And I organize bike rides for people who are blind and low vision because, you know, we can't steer in the front, but people who are blind and low vision can pedal on the back of a tandem, you know, just fine. So I've taken my groups zip lining at Go Ape in Swope Park. Those courses are very blind friendly because they hook you into a harness and you've got a little carabiner that's attached to a guide rope, and you're climbing through things and walking along tight ropes, and you're connected. So it's something that a blind person can pretty much do, you know, all on their own if they're brave enough.
But
the last time I went, I took 10 people through, and 5 could see and 5 couldn't. And we had one in each group who wimped out.
That's great.
Yeah, it was pretty fun.
Yeah, that's great. And of course, you had people there to make sure that the experience was safe, right?
Oh, sure. We probably had more than our share of staff people on hand, you know, terrified of lawsuits or whatever. No, it was great.
Right.
It went really well. You know, and at the Whole Person, we
So I just want to tell you, I went zip lining three times, and I thought I was being brave. I can't imagine doing it, without sight.
Yeah, right.
Well, you know, you're really attached pretty well. I've taken my group up north to Snow Creek, and we've gone downhill skiing. You should see blind people downhill skiing with people skiing around them screaming, left, right, stop!
Yeah. I know. I mean, it could be a real problem. You're skiing into trees and whatever, skiing off cliffs and so forth and so on. You got to be very, very careful. You have to have guides who pick reasonable slopes. They don't actually take on advanced slope, right?
I think to be fair, we really should give a shout out to Midwest Adaptive Sports, who does have very well trained guides who help with those programs. And also I participate, I'm a big cross country skier, so there's a group that I go with called International Ski for Light, and their guides come early for, you know, days of training, and they have great, you know, guide videos, and we, you know, everybody, there are rules. And the first rule that you do when you're cross country skiing with your guide is, if your guide yells sit, you sit. You don't ask, you don't stop and ask questions. You don't say why. I don't know.
You just fall down on your butt, right? That's it.
You sit when they say sit.
That's MidwestAdaptiveSports.org, all one word, right?
Yeah.
Hey.
And the other one is SFL.org.
SFL.org.
SFL.org. Okay, so I've seen
SFL.org.
Yes, Ski for Light, SFL.org. There you go.
Okay.
And that is a really wonderful event.
No, this is...
You know, there are...
Lambda.org looks like a vegan charity food relief organization.
No, SFL.
Ski for Light, SFL.
Ski for Light. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. SFL.org.
SkiForLife.org.
Oh, okay.
Here's another one for you, ACB.org. It's a wonderful organization.
American Council for the Blind, ACB.org.
Uh-huh.
And that's great. Okay.
Yeah.
And you're with...
We people with disabilities like to say, nothing about us without us. So
yes, that's great. Okay. And
The American Council of the Blind has all kinds of amazing programs that assist people with disabilities and connect them and get them going. We work on, you know, voting rights. We have a big Get Up and Get Moving campaign going right now where we are really trying to create partnerships with all manner of companies, and we've just gotten 24-hour fitness to, I hope that's the right gym. I hate to say the wrong thing on the air, who has agreed to make all of their gym equipment accessible. You know what a drag it is to go into a gym and to, you know, have a flat touch screen where nothing is accessible. Not only does it not talk, but there are no... nothing on the buttons to let you know whether it's...
Yeah, right. No, yeah. No a kind of Braille reader or whatever. Right?
Yeah, no voice, no Braille, no identifying marks.
Yeah,
as a matter
right.
of fact, I just went... My oven has been broken for quite some time, and I have gone to buy out looking, and... In the regular price ranges, you know, $600-$800, most people can afford an oven. I cannot find an oven that is accessible. Oh, I have to jump up to like $1,800 to get an oven that is, you know, big fancy Wi-Fi connected, works with my iPhone. Well, that sounds great, and I'll probably bite the bullet and do it at some point, but it's not fair. That I should have to spend that much money.
Yeah.
And then there is also the issue that blind people are very underemployed. People with disabilities in general are 70% of blind people are underemployed or not employed at all. And many of them have fine educations, but there's still a lot of attitudinal barriers out there that people have to brush up against and fight. And so not only there is a lot of statistical evidence out there, and I know you like statistics, Spencer, that shows that people with disabilities have more expensive lives. We have to pay for so many services, and it costs so much more to take an Uber than it does to drive a car. You can go a lot of places on one tank of gas, and you know, it's going to cost me $10 to go 4 miles in an Uber. Yep. And unfortunately, in Kansas City, the buses don't go a lot of places. So I had to buy a house that costs a little more than I wish it did, because I have to live on a bus line so I can get to work on the bus and not pay for an Uber, you know, every day.
Yep. So you talked about the wholeperson.org, ABC.org, the American Council.
No, ACB.
ACB, American Council for the Blind. Yeah, Right. So, and you talked about
SFL.org.
Other organizations locally here. My phone is malfunctioning. Sorry. So anyway.
I didn't know your phone talked like mine does.
Yeah. So anyway.
I mean, there are all kinds of places online. If you type in talking scale.
Type in what?
Talking scale, like don't you want to get on something?
TALKINGSCALE.
Type that in and you'll see all the places you could buy a talking scale or a talking thermometer. There are a lot of products out there, there's a ton. Don't you just want to get a scale and have it say in a really loud voice how much you weigh?
Not too loud. You don't want your neighbors to know, right?
When I weigh myself, I close the door and I kind of sing a little, you know.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful. Okay.
So doesn't. Is that Frank?
Has a talking elevator. Oh, that's great. That's great. So
yes, there are talking elevators, and they're ill. You know, the ADA, when it was passed in 1990, it did a really great job in some respects, but we still have a lot of work left to do. They did pretty well with physical accessibility, and although there is still work to be done, every place isn't wheelchair accessible. A lot of places are, but there is something that I would like to highlight. Back in 1990, websites weren't even around yet, so the ADA didn't require accessible websites. And now we are in a situation where we think it will happen. We think it will be mandated. But in the meantime, people are suing and for accessible websites. Yeah. And most of the court cases have been favorable, but this year there was one that wasn't, but it's still going in the right direction.
Yeah, well, I'm with the Equipment, Facilities, and Technology Committee of KKFI, and and Ito Utini, whom you mentioned, informed us that our website was not accessible, and we've certainly been discussing that, and we're working on figuring out what we need to do to fix that. So,
and you know that these things work better when you build them from the ground up, rather than having to go back and fix it.
And we recently got an upgrade a couple of years ago to our website, and it probably should have been done then, but it wasn't. So anyway. For our audience, in case you just joined us, we are talking with Sheila Styron about the International Day of Persons with Disabilities, which will be getting this coming Friday, December 3rd, and we're talking about other facilities for the blind and disabled in Kansas City. Continue, Sheila.
When I looked online, I wanted to see, you know, who was celebrating this day, and mostly what I saw was people saying that it's a good opportunity to talk about all the things that we are talking about today. So I guess my mission here today is to raise awareness and you know, if people have questions, please do call the whole person or visit our website at, you know, thewholeperson.org. And that is, again, a whole with a W-H-O-L-E. And or give us a call. And if anybody has specific questions about service animal issues, that is sort of my area of expertise, is working with service animals. Please call the whole person or track me down online at the whole person, and I'll be happy to answer those types of questions. I was fortunate. It took 10 years, but starting around 2000, when I was president of Guide Dog Users Incorporated, we worked with a coalition of all kinds of service animal organizations, Assistance Dogs International, and we worked with the Department of Justice on revising the service animal definition, and we went through all of the formal steps, and we had periods of public comment and public notices. And we did this for about 9 years, and they finally narrowed down the definition. No longer can cats be considered service animal, or snakes, or spiders, or chickens, or pigs. It is now narrowed down to dogs. And there it is asked that if businesses could see their way clear, if it doesn't represent too much of a fundamental alteration to the way somebody does their business, that miniature horses may be considered as guide animals. But they're not actually service animals. It just asks that businesses maybe consider accepting them if one shows up.
That's very interesting. I think Ito Utini mentioned, or you mentioned to me in prep for this show, something about traveling, air travel with a service dog. Talk about that.
Yes. In the past year, the Department of Transportation has issued new guidance. Well, let me back up a little and say that as a result of a proliferation of emotional support animals flying, emotional support animals, now I'm not saying they're all poorly behaved, but many of them are, and incidents of inappropriate relieving in the air cabins, and the numbers of bites, I can't quote the numbers, but you can probably find it online. I've you know, read that the bites just went up. People, you know, flight attendants are being bitten a lot. So this year, emotional support animals are now considered as pets, and they can fly under the same rules that pets can fly. They have to be paid for, and they have to be contained. And they kept saying that service animals and guide dogs weren't the problem. But all of a sudden now, within the past year, we have to fill out forms. We have to write who our vet is, and write about our rabies, and we have to write what our animal looks like, what our animal's a big, burdensome passel of paperwork. And the unfortunate part, or one of the unfortunate aspects, is that these forms were not accessible. They said we had to fill them out, but then they didn't make them accessible. So, and I've known people who've gotten into scrapes getting to the airport who didn't know that these things were required. And another difficulty is that none of the airlines are handling the process the same way. Southwest says, oh, you just show up with the paper. Somebody else says, you have to, you know, when I flew with American in June, you have to submit it online. I've just made reservations with, I'm going to ski two different places this winter. And for Southwest, they say, I have to present the form in paper. And for Air Canada, I have to present the form online. I have to go, you know, to the Department of Transportation website and get the form, and then try to make it accessible and fill it out. Then I have to figure out, you know, how to submit it electronically. You know, these things are supposed to be equal. You know, I'm not supposed to, because I have a service animal, to have to go through all of this extraordinary effort. And it's been it's been more than annoying.
Right.
I can't say what I really think. Something about George Carlin. I don't know.
Yeah, right. So remind me, what are the major categories of disabilities from severe to mild?
Well, I guess I would say that there are as many different disabilities and as many different degrees of disability, spectrums, if you will, as there are people who have them. You know, you can't lump all blind people into one group. You can't lump all people who use wheelchairs into a group. Everybody, you know, has different needs and views their disability differently and has a different level of basic independence. It's interesting about blindness because most people think either you can see or you can't see. And the fact of the matter is there are really very few people who are totally blind. I am actually the real deal. I am totally blind. But most people have some vision. And so they may not look blind and they may get a lot of, you know, I walk around with a guide dog. And so people look at me and they pretty much know I'm blind. You know, I don't have, you know, it can be very uncomfortable for people to, you know, not have their disability recognized. And then on the other side of the coin, you have people who don't want to publicly admit their disability. They don't want to talk about it. It doesn't really show. And they like to keep it private until a need arises for them to disclose it. So that was a very complicated question, you know, and we could probably talk about that for a really long time. Something else I would like to mention before we go off the air, it's a big, an issue that is very important to me, and that is audio description. And audio description takes many shapes and forms, but that is there, of all material that's out there, about 95% of it is captioned for the deaf. You know, that's the subtitles that people can, you know, scroll along as they're watching something. And when it comes to audio description, the verbal side of making things accessible, less than 5% of everything is accessible. Yeah. The American Council of the Blind is working really hard on that. We have gotten some cooperation from companies like Netflix is doing more and more programs with audio description. So when I want to watch something, I will usually turn on Netflix. And if it doesn't have audio description, I ain't watching it. So just know, if you want me to watch your stuff, you better audio describe it. And audio description can be at museums. It can be a service that's offered at a live play. They'll maybe have somebody in the back with a microphone, and they will, you know, you'll have a set of headphones, and it won't be
okay,
something
well,
that
think,
everyone
I
listens to.
I think I need to interrupt at this point, Sheila. We're pretty close to out of time. If people want more information, they can go to thewholeperson.org. That's thewholeperson, all one word, .org. Or they can go to acb.org. That's American Council for the Blind. If they're more adventurous, they can go to sflskiforlife.org.
We need guides. We need people
guides.
To come ski
exactly
with us.
Right.
Yeah.
You can Google for or do a web search for talking scale and find scales for the blind.
Yeah.
It will tell you how much you weigh. You know, tell the world
in a loud voice, right?
Okay, and
if you love guide dogs, you might check out guidedogs.com.
Guidedogs.com.
That's where all mine have come from. If you want to learn more about guide dogs,
we need to leave it there, Sheila. We have been talking with Sheila Styron about programs for people with disabilities. This coming Friday will be the International Day of Persons with Disabilities and so forth.
I'm
Spencer Grace. Thank you very much for listening. Craig?
host of Art Speak Radio, inviting you to tune in every Wednesday, noon to 1 p.m. for Art Speak Radio. We serve up information about the visual and literary arts community, including live interviews.